This episode contains movie spoilers. Don't say we didn't warn you.
All right. Cool. You good?
I am good. I couldn't hear you for a second when you said 1, 2, so I was just kind of guessing when you said 3.
It's close enough.
It'll be good. It's all good. Oh, man. Haley and I were just talking about how... what a week it's been. And it's Tuesday. And it will be Tuesday for you guys. A couple
just
days
next
before
Tuesday.
Halloween. Yes, just next Tuesday. So... Halloween. I can't believe this is gonna be the last one.
Yeah, like, seriously, this is five.
It feels like our journey started so long ago when I was young and naive and I didn't have fears of anything except for demonic entities.
And we've made you face your fears on multiple occasions with this.
Did, yes. I feel like I've grown and I've learned and I'm still afraid.
Well, I mean, at least on the bright side, we're like, you know, 95% sure that the Amityville Horror thing was a hoax, so...
Yes, yes, that was definitely the worst. And to be truthful, this one that we're going to talk about today is the only one I did not go back and rewatch. I've seen it, but it's just been...
It's been a hot minute.
Ooh, yeah, it feels like it's been a hot minute since we last recorded. So this is It's Hereditary. I'm Caroline... recovering a little bit from a head cold that the doctor would not give me a shot for. I don't want to talk about it.
And this is Haley. I'm here.
Here looking fabulous. She looks amazing, you guys. Your hair. I tried to go... Okay, so I'll cut all this, but the last time I went to the salon, I was so mad. Not so mad. I went in wanting strawberry blonde. This was before you went red.
Mm-hmm.
And my... hairstylist was like, I don't know. Usually that's edited and it doesn't come out as you want. It takes a lot of work and this, that, and the other. I was like, okay, fine. And then Haley got her hair this beautiful, what is that? Like a dark strawberry blonde?
No, it's a red. It's copper. It's red.
So it's like a copper.
Now it's faded to like a red blonde, but I want to like get it touched up because I missed my Black Widow red hair.
She had Black Widow red. And then her sister... got this kind of ombre, it was like Little Mermaid red. Yeah, it was really pretty. And so I went back this weekend and I showed her, and I just wanted like copper. Like just, I've got some, a little bit of red tone in my hair because I'm blonde. But she was like, meh, no. And I don't know how I feel about my hair, so.
And see, our stylist was like, yes, we're gonna do this. Like she had no hesitation.
Did she do your eyebrows as well?
No.
Because they match really well.
No, they really don't. This is, you know, MAC eyeshadow filling in my...
Oh, gotcha.
My eyebrows. They're brown. It's the lighting in here with my, you know, hurricane lights while I sit in my closet.
Yeah, I can see you
in case
so
anybody
well.
Didn't know, because we're not fancy here. No. We don't have a studio. I'm in my closet because there are two doors between me and Kylo and the barking. So,
yeah, and Graham, you can just hear crunching in the background, but if it means he won't bark, then you guys are just going to have to deal with it because he's being good. When my roommate gets home, it might be a different story. But to kind of introduce our episode, it's our last one. Like we said, it's Halloween in a couple days. We watched Halloween, the original, the OG. And to kind of kick it off, I just wanted to see like what, share your favorite Halloween memory. What's your favorite memory from Halloween?
Me?
Yeah. Or your favorite costume?
I don't even remember most Halloweens, but I do remember, like, the last time that I dressed up, I was either in eighth grade or I was a freshman in high school because Jake was a baby.
That was the last time you dressed up?
Because Jake was a baby. At least not, like, for, like, trick-or-treating purposes.
Gotcha.
I just wore jeans and like an old tank top of Lauren's with a leather jacket and a sword on my hip, and I was like, I'm Buffy, we're done. And I don't even remember what Jake was dressed as, because I remember he at least had this like elaborate like ball gown Tinkerbell outfit that Mom still has in a closet somewhere, and then we had little baby Jake. But there's a photo somewhere. I just don't.
I feel like I do remember you as Buffy. My friend's thinking about being Buffy. I remember one Halloween, my mom, it was in the midst of the Harry Potter movies coming out, and I think it was between 1 and 2, and so I wanted to be a witch, but I didn't want to buy the bag costume, so she made me a cloak, and it was this, like, deep purple velvet, and I had these big sleeves that were glitter.
It had the stars on the other side.
It had the stars on the inside. I still have it. And she made me a wand. Yeah. It was gorgeous.
Elise and I had them, too. Mine was green, and Elise's, I think, was pink.
That's right. I forgot. I didn't have sisters, so we all dressed up together. And then I was a hippie one time, and that was really fun. That Halloween was fun, because I was, like, in, I don't know, third or fourth grade, and we all went to... Like, parents and everyone went to my friend's house, and it was, like, this block party. Oh, I loved Halloween.
All my visitors that I've had the past, like, week have been going to Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party, and literally everybody's been dressing as Dalmatians.
That's awesome.
And I don't know if you saw the picture on Facebook. Like, they found a shirt for Anthony. It literally said, pretend I'm a Dalmatian.
I saw the picture. It was so cute.
I was like, yes.
Which, speaking of... if we want, we can post. I have, my last Halloween was probably the best costume I've been. You know what I was my last Halloween. But I managed to wrangle my group of friends back home, and we were delinquent princesses. So, or delinquent
fairy
Disney
tales.
Girls, fairy tales. So I was Snow White, and I had my little mugshot for narcotics possession, and I had a friend that was Cinderella and Red Riding
Hood.
Weren't
you Alice? I thought you were Alice.
What did
I
say?
With narcotics possession. Snow White.
Sorry, I was Alice with my little narcotics possession sign. It was so fun. We went out, and it was just the best time.
Are you guys doing that this year?
I don't know if we're going to go out, because we're going to my cousin's with the little ones. And I get to give out candy, which I love giving out candy, and I haven't gotten to do it in forever. But if you guys are lucky, I'll drop little hints to what I'm trying to be. Maybe Haley wants to do that too, because I think it's going to be epic what my costume's going to be this year.
You can be dramatic about it. I'm being Black Widow.
I'm going to be dramatic about it.
I have... like those pleather leggings with I bought a thigh holster for a toy gun, and I have a Black Widow tank top with a black leather jacket with the shield logo.
That's awesome. That's
to put on the shoulder. Done. Because I'm going to a party after a child's birthday party on Saturday.
Yes.
Jackson's birthday party.
Aww, I didn't realize it was his birthday. How old is he?
2.
Chubby.
So we're going to Tampa tomorrow for the Penguins, Tampa Bay Lightning hockey game, and then Saturday's his party.
Yeah.
So it'll be a good time.
So fun, yes. So those were our favorite Halloween memories. You know what Haley's going to be. I'm going to play my cards close to the chest and keep it a secret, because I'm kind of trying to keep it a secret for everyone, even though some people know. But yeah, if you want to send us your favorite Halloween memories or your favorite, send us pictures of your favorite costume, we'll post it. And, with that, anything else you want to add? I'm just like real. I'm dragging it out because I'm sad. Spooky season's gonna be over.
Yeah, spooky season's almost over, and I still haven't watched Hocus Pocus yet, which I'm
girl.
Terrible.
Same. Did I text you about that? I texted someone about that.
No, I have it on DVD, so I can watch it. But the last time I wanted to sit down and watch like a, you know, Halloweenish feeling movie, I watched Practical Magic instead.
I haven't seen that. I watched The Corpse Bride for the first time, which I actually kind of liked. It was kind of cute.
Tim Burton, I just cannot get into those, like, stop-motion, like, type movies. I just can't.
Yeah, I loved Wallace and Gromit growing up, though. So
yeah, you did.
It kind of reminds me of that. It's very nostalgic for me. So, with that, shall we begin?
We shall. Mm-hmm. So, In case all this talk about Halloween made you confused at any point, we are talking about the movie Halloween today, the original 1978 indie slasher film starring Donald Pleasance and the Scream Queen herself, Jamie Lee Curtis, in her film debut, in case anybody did not know that.
I was really surprised about that whenever I learned
that. And she's done so many. All of the bad remakes that go with this movie. It was directed and scored by John Carpenter, and scoring the movie only took him 4 days, because he's awesome.
Yes, he's a genius.
So Halloween was inspired by an experience that John Carpenter had during a psychology class in college. His class had toured a psychiatric hospital where Carpenter met a child who stared at him with a look of evil, and it terrified me, is what he said. And seriously, that applies to quite a few children. I mean, kids just give you this look, and it's like, you know, something's
not right.
Yeah.
I was really surprised whenever I was reading about that. I think this was like a beginner's psychology class. And I don't know if you...
Intro to psych.
I don't know. Did you take intro to psych?
Yeah.
Like,
sitting in that class... We didn't go to our psychiatric hospitals.
There's no way they would have let us do that. A, there were too many of us, and B, we were all idiot college freshmen.
That is the science elective that everybody, like, chose to take because it was easy.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, no.
It's just...
We were at the bottom of, oh, God, it's been too long. Lockett? What's the math? Yeah.
That's where I was,
in the
too.
Basement of Lockett.
In the big one? The big room, yes. In the middle?
Yep. In the middle, yeah.
Really quick, just I want to mention our sources, obviously Wikipedia, obviously IMDb, obviously Ranker, and I also use Vice for my story later on.
Yeah, I used IMDb and Daily Mail and CBS.
Ooh, that'll be good. Okay, I'm excited. I think Haley knows what I did, but I don't know what she did later on.
Yeah.
So back to Halloween, the indie slasher horror flick. The film had a budget of $300,000, which is shocking. There are houses more expensive than what they got to make what is now a classic horror movie. And upon its release, it grossed $70 million worldwide, obviously becoming one of the most profitable independent films ever. The success of the first film spawned a franchise of 11 films constructing a backstory for antagonist Michael Myers, though the narrative slash canon is debatable from film to film. Because, as Haley will probably mention, if you want to watch Halloween, quote-unquote, in sequential order, you kind of go Halloween to the Halloween 2018 movie, right? That's kind of the sequel. Mm-hmm. And the other ones are just kind of like...
It took a storyline that they didn't originally intend with the first movie... And the new Halloween that came out last year was the one that, like, reset it back on the course that the first one took. Mm-hmm. And the next Halloween is still going to follow that timeline. So it's like they branch out into two separate timelines, like alternate universes almost.
Do you know, was the 2018 one directed by John Carpenter?
I don't know.
I just didn't know if you knew off the top of your head. The film is certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes with a critic score of 96% and an audience score of 89%. In 2006, the Library of Congress selected Halloween for preservation in the United States National Film Registry, citing the film as being, quote, culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. So it's so important that even the government decided it was important enough to make sure we have a copy somewhere, I guess.
Yeah, the 2018 was not directed by John Carpenter. Okay. And all of that about Rotten Tomatoes just really surprised me because I'm not a fan of the original Halloween. It's not scary.
No.
That's also 70s horror movies for you. The original Prom Night, all of those movies, they're not to me anyway.
Aesthetically, you can tell why it's important, and especially when you look at that $300,000 film budget and then what it made.
Yeah, and what, obviously and what it did they did with it. Right.
Exactly. Right. But if you, as a millennial who watched it for the first time last year, my roommate and I were not impressed at all.
Right. And, like, today, when you sit down and watch a horror movie, you want to be scared a little bit. Mm-hmm. You want to jump. The only horror movie that's ever done that for me is the remake of It. Chapter 2 didn't, but that's because I was in a theater full of high schoolers that wouldn't shut up. That's a whole other thing. But It scared the living hell out of me. I had nightmares. Mm. And that's, like, one of the only horror movies that did that. And Halloween was just so far from reaching mm-hmm. that point. But
yeah,
it's
you gotta
watch
it.
Phenomena all on its own.
It's a classic.
Though not originally his first choice, John Carpenter considered casting Jamie Lee Curtis in the starring role. That was an ultimate tribute to Alfred Hitchcock, who was a major influence on his film, as Hitchcock had cast Jamie Lee's mother, Janet Lee, in Psycho. I did not know that, which yes. is cool.
Yes.
Jamie Lee Curtis was paid $8,000 for her role.
That's so crazy. But essentially, in the way Scream kind of has the Easter eggs from all the other horror movies, like the Halloweens and the Friday the 13th. Halloween does that, but with Alfred Hitchcock films almost. Like, he does a lot. He takes a lot from Alfred Hitchcock to kind of pay tribute to him and to kind of expand on his aesthetic and his creativity.
So John Carpenter originally approached Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee to play psychiatrist Dr. Sam Loomis. The role eventually was accepted by Donald Pleasance. Both turned him down due to low pay on the part, which, I mean, again, low budget film. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be able to pay you too much.
Right.
Later on, Lee said this was the biggest mistake he'd ever made in his career. Donald Pleasance, who was originally going to turn it down but accepted because his daughter really was pushing for it, he was paid $20,000 for his part.
And actually, Donald Pleasance's daughter was a fan of another one of John Carpenter's movies, so that's why she really pushed to have her dad star in it. So five different people, really kind of six, dressed as Michael Myers, aka The Shape. So behind that mask, it's kind of, it's not anyone's guess, but it's not one person. Now, Nick Castle is the predominant actor that plays The Shape, a.k.a. Michael Myers, throughout the movie. What I thought was funny is you could just – I loved reading the behind the scenes because you could tell how low budget this was. He only accepted this role because he kind of wanted to get experience and see what it was like to create movies, like, behind the camera. So he was just going to be on set, and it's like, since you're on set, you might as well put on the mask. You're the right size. He had this walk that John Carpenter liked. So that's how I gave him the part, and that's actually how a lot of people ended up wearing the mask. It's like, oh, you're on set today. Okay, you're gonna be Michael Myers today. I also liked how John Carpenter gave very little direction for Nick Castle in his role as Michael Myers. In one example, when Castle asked what Michael's motivation was for a certain scene, Carpenter replied that his motivation was to walk from one set marker to the other. That's it. You just, here's your first mark, walk to the second one. That's your motivation. Which, I feel like kind of knowing all this stuff, it's like, oh, I kind of see what you were trying to do here. I would like to rewatch now that I know all of this stuff. Another actor who played Michael Myers was Tony Moran, who played him during The Unmasking by Laurie. And I think, I can't really remember, but I know, like, he's kind of like, he looks all disfigured. But Tony Moran is not wearing any makeup. I think it was just something with lighting. And they had actually said it's something like you're expecting something disfigured and scary. So that's what kind of people saw. But he wasn't really wearing any makeup.
Same.
Feel that. Another person that played Michael Myers was James Winburn, who was a stuntman who would just do all the stunts, like when he falls off the balcony. Tommy Lee Wallace was a production designer who played Michael when he would break props, and Wallace would play him because he knew as production designer how much force it would take to break certain props.
And do it in a single take.
Exactly, because they didn't have enough money to do multiple takes.
To refill.
Yes, he could do it once and it was good. So he'd play it and then. Deborah Hill, who was one of the writers for Halloween, also played Michael Myers. She plays him in the external wide shot when Tommy sees the Shape for the first time. And the only reason she played the Shape in this scene was because she was the only one on set that happened to have the costume in her car that day. Like, she showed up, she had the costume, nobody else did. So they're like, okay, you're gonna do it.
I love how they were really winging this movie.
I love it so much. It's like you got with your buddies and you just decided you wanted to make a horror movie. Like, can you imagine? That's essentially what they did. They got with their friends, they made this horror movie, and they made $70 million on it. So Deborah Hill also plays the hands of young Michael before he's wearing the mask. because they were waiting for the young actor, but they needed to kind of move production along. So when you see just his hands, that's Deborah Hill, and that's why his hands are so manicured. And I do remember noticing that, like how his hands, like his fingernails are very long, and it creeped me out. Well, that's why, because a woman was playing him. And as a little bonus, John Carpenter is said to have made a cameo behind the mask. And like I said, supposedly the only reason why Michael Myers was played by so many different actors was because it all depended who was on set and available on what day. So it wasn't just one person. Now, as I've been saying, we all know him as Michael Myers, but technically in credits, and if you look him up on IMDb, Michael Myers is referred to as the Shape. And this could be because the word shape was used in the Salem witch trial when judges would describe specters of the accused conducting mischief or harming another person. So that kind of comes from Salem witch trial history. And another fun fact, which I loved, if we haven't mentioned it enough, this was an extremely low budget film, so low budget that there was no money for a costume department. So all of the actors just wore their own clothes. Jamie Lee Curtis bought Laurie Strode's wardrobe at JCPenney's all for less than $100.
That's nuts.
I think that's the funniest thing ever.
And that's the 70s for you, because you can't buy a wardrobe for $100.
No. No.
I can't buy two shirts for $100, at least not at, like, the boutiques that I shop at back home.
Oh, honey, I've got a I've got a website to show you.
So back to we talked about, you know, the making of, now back to the movie. So, to start off, it's Halloween night, of course, in 1963 in Haddonfield, Illinois. If anybody needs anything more specific than that, it's a Thursday.
I was about to say, I went digging for that. You better mention it.
And 6-year-old Michael Myers stabs his older sister to death without so much as an explanation. And she is sitting in front of a vanity. Nope, no shirt on. Just, you know, doing her hair and whatever. All willy-nilly. And he comes in and stabs her.
I was literally about to ask, why does she stab her? Why does he stab her again? And now I'm remembering that.
There's no reason.
There literally is no explanation. They couldn't afford
and
the storyline for an explanation.
The 6-year-old is then incarcerated at Smith's Grove Sanitarium. And, you know, we did talk about, you know, sanitariums and sanatoriums and all that. It's a sanitarium because it's an asylum.
That's right.
Then we cut to 15 years later. Michael's 21. His psychiatrist, Dr. Samuel Loomis, and colleague Marion Chambers arrive at the hospital to escort Michael to court. Michael proceeds to attack them, steal their car, and escape. His destination is his hometown of Haddonfield. The movie was filmed in sunny California in spring rather than a Midwestern autumn. You can still spot palm trees in the backgrounds of some of the shots. The crew had trouble finding pumpkins, and to make it seem more like fall, they had to paint and scatter artificial leaves.
Loved that.
You know.
Casual.
As you do. Robert Englund from A Nightmare on Elm Street came back again. He likes all of his cameos because he showed up in Urban Legend. He revealed that John Carpenter had him throwing some of these leaves on set for one of the days of filming Halloween.
Which is funny because this is Robert Englund pre-Nightmare on Elm Street. So it's just funny that he's finding himself.
He's still here.
He's still there and he doesn't even know, like, he's going to be a huge thing. I was reading one of the goofs is when Michael breaks out of prison, everyone's like, he was incarcerated when he was 6 and he shouldn't know how to drive, which I'm just like, huh.
Yes.
Fair.
That is true. He should not know how to drive.
So they explained it to where Dr. Loomis would have been driving him to court dates or appointments or whatever, and he would have just learned, like, that's the explanation, like, learned by watching.
Okay.
Haley's very skeptical, as am I. I just think it's funny. They couldn't afford to elaborate.
This is true. This is very true.
So upon his return to his hometown, 15 years to the day of his first known crime, because I just find it hard to believe. I know we didn't have the money to expand on it, but, like, why would that be your first crime? So that's why I included that. Michael kills a mechanic for his coveralls. He then steals a white mask and knives from a local hardware store, thereby completing his villainous ensemble. Now, a little behind the scenes, before landing on the Captain Kirk mask, that would be the Michael Myers mask, they considered...
Like Shatner Captain Kirk, not the gorgeous Chris Pine that we have today.
We're in the 70s.
I know, but oh my god, he's so cute.
He is very pretty.
Go back, continue. But yes,
Shatner, obviously. Designers also considered masks of Richard Nixon, Spock, and Emmett Kelly. So they were hardcore in the Star Trek universe. So back to the movie. That afternoon, after killing the mechanic, Michael notices student Laurie Strode drop off a key at his former home. He begins to stalk her and her friends, Annie Brackett and Linda Vanderklok, because he has nothing better to do. And Laurie seems to be the only one who notices someone watching her. And I dug around because I thought it was a psychological thing, that feeling of feeling someone watching you. I couldn't find anything that was like, this is the name of it. But it's, I mean, it's a evolutionary thing that's not always super reliable. We only feel like someone's watching us when we think someone's watching us. So you have to be aware.
Yep. So, meanwhile, Dr. Loomis arrives in Haddonfield, because obviously where else would Michael go? The only place he knew.
True.
I mean, he was six when he was put away.
How did he get there?
The other thing, how does he know how to get home?
Yeah, these are all really good questions. We're just poking holes.
Like, seriously,
in this movie.
He's not a carrier pigeon. He does not, like, I don't freaking know. Like, I don't know.
We haven't done a quote post in a while, but we might have to do he's not a carrier pigeon.
About Michael Myers. So Dr. Loomis arrives in Haddonfield in pursuit of Michael and finds that a tombstone has been stolen from the local cemetery, and that tombstone belongs to Judith Myers, Michael's sister that he murdered. Loomis then meets with the town sheriff, Lee Brackett, and the pair investigate Michael's old house. While there, Loomis is able to convince Brackett of the danger Michael poses, and the sheriff agrees to patrol the street. Loomis, on the other hand, waits at the house because he expects Michael to return.
I don't remember this whole part, but I kind of feel like when I was watching it, I felt like he was being kind of worthless. But that was a year ago, so who knows. I had a lot of feelings about this moving that...
At least they tried, and at least the sheriff didn't just go, eh.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as they tend to do in horror movies. Yeah. Oh, no, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
They actually took him seriously.
Yeah. So later that night, the Babysitter's Club, as I like to call them, began their watch. Lori babysits Tommy Doyle while her friend Annie is babysitting Lindsay Wallace across the street. Both are unaware that they have been followed by a mentally unstable psychopath. And early into the evening, Annie's boyfriend Paul calls her to pick him up. So then Annie takes Lindsay over to the Doyle house for Lori to watch. So now Lori is watching two children. And what have we learned from our spooky season celebration? Check the back seat.
Yeah. Annie doesn't do that. So when she gets into her car, Michael pops up in the back seat, strangles her, and slits her throat, just for good measure. We don't believe in overkill, apparently. Soon after Annie's death, Lori's other friend Linda and her boyfriend Bob arrive at the Wallace house. And of course, because it's a slasher movie, the two have sex in the now empty house. Afterward, Bob heads downstairs to grab a beer. All of these are Randy's rules of the no-goes. Let's not drink. Mm-hmm. Let's not have sex. All of these things. Otherwise, you're gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
And really, though, what kind of babysitters are these? Like, going back to Amityville Horror last week, where she tells them all about the murders that happened in the house because she babysat for the kids and she's dressed like a stripper.
Yeah.
Like, where? Why?
Like, you're not even babysitting these kids. You're just going to go in and have sex because your friend is babysitting? What? Yeah. Where's the respect?
Yeah. Where are your references? But this is also the 70s and people were hitchhiking and we know better now.
That's true.
So everybody has references.
I can't even imagine hitchhiking.
No. Bob heads downstairs to grab a beer, and Michael nails him to the wall with a kitchen knife.
Yeah, that was intense, because he's kind of hanging on the wall. Some serious strength behind that. So, Michael then dons a ghost costume, and posing as Bob, confronts Linda, who's still in bed. She teases him, but when he doesn't, quote, cut it out, she gets annoyed and calls Lori. It is at this point that Michael strangles her with a telephone cord, all while Lori is listening to her choking cries on the other end of the line. So while Michael is busy with this killing spree, Loomis discovers the stolen car and he begins searching the streets for Michael.
You do have to, like, give Michael points for being resourceful. Like, he doesn't have, like, an MO. Like, he's not, like, Ghostface with the knife. Nope. He's not, like, Jason with the machete or Freddy with the thing. He just grabs whatever's available.
Yeah, he's resourceful. That's for sure.
So, suspicious of the phone call she received from Linda, Lori goes over to the Wallace house where she finds Linda's body, as well as the bodies of Annie and Bob. Lori also finds Judith Myers' headstone.
Yeah, that's creepy.
And how did he get it out of the cemetery, across town and into a house with no one noticing? Because that's a big thing of rock.
Yeah.
Like, most headstones are granite. That is solid granite.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's not light.
No.
Was he doing, like, was he, what kind of weights was he lifting in this mental hospital?
I don't know. I mean, I couldn't even deign a guess. I have no idea.
I don't. So, anyway, understandably horrified, Lori cowers in the hallway, and Michael suddenly appears and attacks her. Lori just manages to escape, fleeing back to the Doyle house where she left the kids.
That's right, she did. And this is pretty much how the last 30-ish minutes of the movie progresses. Lori runs, cowers somewhere, Michael attacks her, Lori barely escapes, and then around and around they go. It just keeps going.
Yeah. So, back at the Doyle house, Michael enters the house, but Lori manages to hold him off long enough for the kids to escape. Dr. Loomis notices the two children running away in the middle of the night. Not super strange for Halloween, but anyway, he goes to investigate and finds Michael and Lori fighting upstairs. Loomis shoots Michael 6 times, causing him to fall off the balcony. And if you haven't seen the movie, you can probably guess what happens when he goes to check out the body. It's not there. Michael's missing. And the movie ends with Dr. Loomis staring off into the night and Lori sobbing in terror and setting up for a sequel.
Yes, there is another one. And oh man, just... This is classic horror. Like, you're watching, even if you haven't seen it, you're like, oh, this is classic horror.
Yes.
So, movie's over, and obviously John Carpenter and his writer Deborah Hill are being asked about... Everyone's got to read into everything. So, they have both stated multiple times over the years that Halloween was not consciously meant to depict virginity as a way to defeat a killer. So, that wasn't supposed to be made as one of the rules. They cite the reason for all the horny teens dying is simply because they were so preoccupied with getting laid that they didn't notice that there was a killer on the loose, which makes sense.
Well, and it was this movie, along with others, that Randy made his rules from.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Because he was watching Halloween when he died. Or no, when the other people died. He didn't die in that movie, but when he was sitting at the house when Billy was killing people.
Yes.
That's what he was watching.
So conversely, Lori spends most of her time alone, which makes her more alert than her friends. So that's the only reason they had her surviving and not her horny friends. Carpenter also dismisses the notion that Halloween is a morality play, stating that it is merely a horror movie. It's just for fun. He explains, quote, "The one girl who is the most sexually uptight just keeps stabbing this guy with a long knife. She's the most sexually frustrated. She's the one that's killed him. Not because she's a virgin, but because of all that sexually repressed energy starts coming out. She uses all those phallic symbols on this guy," which I kind of thought was an interesting note because, I mean, when you watch true crime docs or crime shows, that makes sense. But when you get into the horror genre, no, it's because, you know, she's a virgin. Regardless of the morality behind the movie, there is a super spooky reason that this movie is called Halloween and not something like Arbor Day. People are freer, the night is scarier, and not just in the movie world. So, for your listening pleasure, we've pulled some real-life Halloween true crime stories so you can adequately prepare yourself for this Thursday.
So, the thing about Halloween that gets me is...
What gets you?
For 364 days out of the year... Our parents tell us don't take candy from strangers. And yet, Halloween, they send you door to door to pursue strangers for sugary treats. You're also going door to door, and you don't know these people. You are randomly knocking on strangers' doors.
It's like, yes, now I'm here for your candy, but any other time, don't come at me. I come at you.
Ugh. So, in 1964, A bored housewife named Helen Fail was tired of kids showing up to her house for candy, which, I mean, you can just turn off the light and pretend you're not home. Mm-hmm. It's not that hard.
But what's the fun in that?
Basically, she was tired of kids showing up to her house that she thought were too old to be trick-or-treating. Okay. Uh-huh. So during that fall, she handed out little bottles of arsenic ant poison labeled with a skull and crossbones, as well as dog biscuits and steel wool pads to the neighborhood teens.
It's not funny. I'm not laughing.
Though she tried to explain that she was simply taking part in the trick part of trick-or-treat, which, do you know anybody that actually does the trick part of trick-or-treat?
No.
No.
Helen Fail. Helen Fail does.
Whatever. However you say her name. Seriously. She was charged with child endangerment, and she pleaded guilty. Regardless of the intent, her actions instigated the national panic of Halloween candy and perhaps birthed the urban legend of, you know, poisoned Halloween candy, which that was going around again last week.
Yeah, it always...
Either the poison candy or it's like razor blades.
Razors and needles is the ones I always got.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mom used to...
But that was circulating on Facebook not a couple of days ago.
Yep. Yep. Tis the season. I love that her explanation is, no, 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 it's just trick. You know, trick or treat, trick. Like, oh my gosh.
No, no.
So, speaking of razor blades and needles and candy, that had to come from somewhere, and we'll tell you where. So maybe our moms are all out there thinking, you know, poison candy, we can swap the candy maybe for fruit. Go bobbing for apples instead. Well, don't bother because your kids are probably ahead of you. At least they were in New Jersey in 1968. That Halloween, there were 26 reported cases of children who found razor blades in apples while trick-or-treating, which, who's giving out apples? I never take
open. Who's also taking the time to place razor blades in apples?
Well, it turns
out... And wouldn't you see the cut in the apple? All of these questions.
So many questions. It turns out no one was taking the time to do that. In the majority of these quote-unquote cases, the kids were uninjured. Two studies conducted in 1972 and 1982 determined that nearly all of these claims were false. Nearly being the operative word. In most cases, the kids have put razors in the apples to propagate the urban legend, which, you know, fair, that's a lot of fun.
Well, also, that's a way for them to tell their parents, well, we're not eating fruit and things that are good for us, because look at these dangerous things. We should go back to eating the candy.
You flip it and reverse it. Yeah, so most were written off as a hoax, but most does not mean all. So just, you know, keep an eye out if you're going bobbing for apples and whatnot. So, while most of these tricks were harmless... relatively. Unfortunately, not all are. So, as we mentioned, most urban legends about the razors and the apples or the poison candy are pretty deeply steeped in urban legend. There aren't very many true cases. But what have we learned about urban legend? Usually they are born from something that did happen. So, the 1974 Halloween night in Deer Park, Texas was a rainy one, but that didn't stop the trick-or-treaters. Wouldn't have stopped me if I was a kid. Kids still bounced from door to door, seeking their next sugar high, and the O'Briens were no exception. Ronald Clark O'Brien was out with his kids, 8-year-old Timothy and 5-year-old Elizabeth, joining in the door-knocking festivities. They were also accompanied by their neighbor and his young son. So the whole group was moseying about, trick-or-treating. So as it sometimes happens, the kids came across a dark house, but the promise of candy was too enticing. They banged on the door and waited, but then when no answer came, the kids just ran off to the next house, leaving the dads behind. I mean, you know how it is. Like, you get too excited, you're like, okay, no one's here, run to the next one, and it's like freedom, and you can run in the street, and the dads are like, okay, we'll catch up. Eventually, Ronald caught back up with his children, and this time he came bearing gifts. He had a handful of the 21-inch pixie sticks. Now, how excited were you whenever you got those?
Very excited, but at the same time, on the other end of that, when my students have them, I'm like, whose class are you going to? Not mine.
Well, you're an adult now, so it's not as fun. But when you're a kid, that is the epitome of trick-or-treating. The 21-inch pixie sticks. O'Brien said that someone had been in the dark house after all, and they brought out the pixie sticks to him to give to his kids. So he gave one to Timmy, one to Elizabeth, one to each of the neighbor's kids that were with them, and one for a 10-year-old that he had recognized from church. So, like I said, maybe it was just me. I was always super excited to get these. I kind of can't believe the Pixie Sticks even made it home, but they did. So, before bed, each O'Brien child was allowed one piece of candy, and Timothy chose the glorious Pixie Stick. He cut the top off and tipped it into his mouth, waiting for that first gloriously sugary, sour taste, but the sugar was stuck. So, he asked his dad to help him dislodge it and finally got his first mouthful of sugary goodness. The only thing was, the treat tasted bitter to Timmy, who complained about it to his dad. Ronald grabbed his son a glass of Kool-Aid, which was another great trick-or-treat gift. Our grandma used to give out Kool-Aid from her dry ice cauldron. It was amazing. And gave him a glass of Kool-Aid to wash down the bitter taste with. Almost immediately, Timothy went into convulsions and was rushed to the hospital, but passed away less than an hour after eating the Pixie Stick. So investigation was underway almost immediately. The chief medical examiner noticed the scent of almonds coming from the boy's mouth, and any true crime addict worth her salt knows what that means. What does almonds smell mean?
Poison, cyanide.
A pathologist later confirmed that Timothy had consumed enough cyanide to kill two people. And tests found that the top 2 inches of the Pixie Stick he was so excited about had been packed with the poison. So officers managed to recover the remaining sweets from the other kids, thank goodness, before any of them had a chance to consume them. And the police found that the Pixie Sticks had been restapled after being tampered with, which actually saved one of the kids. The boy was found in bed, like asleep, with the Pixie Stick in his hand, like sugar coma. And it was uneaten because he wasn't strong enough to undo the staples.
Struggle. The struggle's real.
The struggle's so real. I've been there, fam. So police took Ronald to the neighborhood to direct them to the house, like to show them where he got the Pixie Sticks, but he just couldn't seem to remember where he'd gotten them from. He said someone had just walked out of a house and gave him the candy and walked back in, which, I mean, to be fair, things look different in the dark, but you'd think you'd remember.
One, this house supposedly didn't have the lights on, and I'm sorry, your child was poisoned and you don't remember where you got that from?
Remember better.
No, I'm not buying that.
No. As you shouldn't. So a few days went by, and frustrated, the police took Ronald back to the neighborhood, only this time he did remember the house. So he pointed out, the police arrested the man who lived there, but they quickly found that he had an alibi. He had been working, and his wife and daughter had turned out the lights because they'd run out of candy. So, fair. The police started becoming more and more suspicious of Ronald. Soon after Timothy's funeral, maybe you can guess what happened, but police found out that Ronald had recently taken out life insurance policies on both of his children.
Of course he did.
Is there ever a good time to take out a life insurance policy on someone? I mean, I know it's supposed to happen, but feels like there's never a good time. So he had taken out insurance numbering $10,000 on each child in January of that year, and then an additional $20,000 on each child about a month before Halloween. So, perhaps he's been planning for a long time. The police were also aware at this point Ronald owed debts numbering over $100,000, and when they found out that Ronald called insurers to ask about the payout at 9 a.m. the morning after his son's tragic death, they figured, you know, maybe they were looking at the right guy.
Oh, dear Jesus.
Haley just like...
It's a good thing that psychopaths are just also kind of stupid at the same time, or a lot of them are. Mm-hmm. You can count on them to give themselves away.
Yes. Haley just rolled her entire head. Eyes, head, everything. The police received a warrant and searched the O'Brien's house, finding scissors with plastic residue attached, similar to what was found on the cyanide-laced candy. Over the course of the investigation, police found out that Ronald would ask his community college professor, he was still in community college at this point, he would ask them strange questions like, what's more lethal, cyanide or another type of poison? Which, I ask weird questions.
Red flags should have gone up for those professors.
Yeah. Like, I've asked my grandma, if I came to you with a dead body, would you help me hide it? But that's more because it's entertaining to see her answer. I'll record it one day and we'll post it. So, the DNA testing at this time was still kind of in its infancy, The police couldn't definitively put the pixie stick in Ronald's hands, and they also couldn't say for sure that he bought the cyanide. There were reports that someone looking a lot like him purchased the amount that he could at a certain time. Like, he was an optician and was dressed like that and had purchased whatever the amount you can get without being, like, a licensed doctor or something. But there was, like, no security cameras or anything, so they couldn't say for sure it was him. But it wink, 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 was him. So all while this is going on, Ronald is just thriving in the limelight. He loves being the center of attention and being in this media circus. He entered a not guilty plea, blaming the tragedy on an unnamed stranger slash boogeyman-like character. But the witnesses that came forward to testify against what the press was now calling the Candyman were enough to sway a jury. So on June 3rd, 1975, it took the jury only 46 minutes to return a verdict: guilty for one charge of capital murder and guilty on four counts of attempted murder. An hour later, Ronald was sentenced to death. After all his appeals were exhausted, he was executed by electric chair on March 31st, 1984. So while there have been reports of things in candy like the razors and the needles, the tragic story of Timothy O'Brien remains the only one where a child died from eating poisoned Halloween candy.
That's so sad. And his own dad, like, that's...
His own dad, on one of the best days of the year as a kid. It's tragic.
That you keep warning your kids, stay away from strangers. That one was living in his house.
I know, it's just so awful.
Mm. And yours was long and it was nice. Mine's two paragraphs, but this one, like, was really cool to me. I mean, very, very sad for this lady, but
I'm not going
to
read it, you know. So you can surprise me. Give me time to make comments.
So mine, I do need to throw up a disclaimer. Mine actually happened on October 28th, not Halloween, but Halloween is referenced in this one.
Oh, okay.
And I couldn't pass it up.
I'm intrigued.
Have you seen The Body on Hulu, that Into the Dark, like... You know how they have the murders surrounding the major holidays in every month?
No.
The Body was the first one that came out. So if you go on Hulu, starting last Halloween, mm-hmm. every month, October, November, December, so Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, there's a New Year's one, Valentine's Day, April Fool's Day. Like, there's a murder surrounding a holiday for every single month of the year.
Stop.
I can't believe you didn't know that.
No, I didn't.
So the first one they ever put out was called The Body. Mm-hmm. And basically it was about this hitman who kills his target on Halloween, wraps the body in saran wrap, and then leaves the scene. And people think it's a Halloween costume and it's a prop that he's dragging around.
Stop.
So he ends up being, like, drugged to this party and he kills a bunch of other people that figure out what's going on. It's this whole thing, but he's literally dragging around a dead body that people think is a prop for Halloween.
Wait, is this true?
So
Haley's shrugging. That's what the silence was. She's shrugging.
So
okay. Oh my gosh.
The very few details are known about this, but basically, a number of eyewitnesses in Long Island, New York, Farmingdale, New York. So there, it's on Long Island.
Okay.
A number of eyewitnesses saw a man calmly drag a decapitated body out of an apartment. No one bothered to call the police because it was a few days before Halloween and they thought it was all some sort of prank to scare the neighbors.
Stop!
So, as soon as the man left the grisly corpse in the street, he kicked the woman's head. It was a woman's body. Kicked the woman's head 20 feet across the street.
No.
Walked 3 blocks to the nearby railroad and took a dive in front of an oncoming eastbound train.
Stop it! Oh my goodness!
So, I'm gonna send you right now, I have a picture of, like, they're covered by sheets, but I have a picture of the body and the head in the street that people were, like, staring at it going, that's not real. There's no freaking way that's real. Like, can you imagine how traumatized you would be?
Oh my gosh.
And so when this dude jumped in front of the train, the neighbors were discovering that the body was not a Halloween prop. And they went as far as to pick it up.
Oh my gosh.
They picked it up and figured out it was real. Turned out, it was the body of Patricia Ward, a 66-year-old professor at New York's Farmingdale State College. She had been stabbed multiple times and had broken ribs. The man who committed the horrendous murder-suicide was her own son, 35-year-old Derek Ward.
No.
This happened in 2014, by the way.
Oh, my goodness.
This was 5 years ago.
This picture really creeps me out. I don't know if it's because I know what it is. That's so, oh, my goodness.
We're going to post it,
too. It's not graphic. It's just knowing what it is.
No, they're covered by sheets, but you know what it is. Yeah. So, Derek supposedly had a history of mental illness, and the recent death of his grandfather triggered a violent episode. Supposedly, his mother had set an appointment for October 30th, the day before Halloween, to see a psychiatrist to renew his medications. He'd been without them for 4 days. Just 4 days, and they only had two more to go.
Wow.
And he snapped. Police could only presume what really happened that day because there were no witnesses or sounds heard at the time of the murder. So they have no idea what actually happened, and the only person that knows, well, besides the victim, jumped in front of a train.
Oh, my goodness. And he's dead.
So police said that Derek Ward had passed arrest and had served time for criminal mischief, weapons, and drug possession. He was caught with 100 Valium pills, but he was never charged with a violent crime. So, like, this, he just snapped. And this dude, like, one, he's got the mental illness. He was, he also, on top of whatever mental illness he had, he was ADHD and dyslexic.
Oh, wow.
And it wasn't just the grandfather that he'd lost. I think he'd lost a brother. Like, one of his brothers died. So, no idea what happened. He snapped, stabbed his mother multiple times, cut off her head, dragged her body into the street and dumped it, and then kicked her head across the street before jumping in front of a train.
Gosh, that's crazy.
And that's all I could find from, like, the Daily Mail and CBS and all that, because it's only 5 years old, and there were no witnesses, so that's all we've got.
Well, it's not like you go to trial for anything, because there's no one to convict, right?
Right.
Wow.
Right. How crazy is that?
How were those two paragraphs way more exciting than my two pages? Congrats.
I thought yours was very, very exciting, but seriously, like, what the hell?
That's I will say, I love this other podcast I listen to, Last Podcast on the Left, which is very popular. They always say mental illness is not your fault, but it is your responsibility. And I feel that.
Oh.
Which I think is good. Because so if you should, I mean, I'm saying because I was medicated before. So yeah, it's not your fault, but it is your responsibility.
And what sucks is his mom had an appointment in 2 days to, like, help him get back. Like,
right.
He was just off his meds for 4 days.
Yeah.
But it was enough.
Yeah.
That's just that apparently, I think she was looking for a new psychiatrist, somebody that would work better with him.
Gotcha.
And
that's tough. Wow. What a crazy story. Wait till we post that picture. That's insane.
Yeah.
And, like, no one did anything. That's, I will say, that was my
experience. It's something about, like, seeing, like, if you, even knowing what it was, like, I've seen a dead body under a tarp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
And knowing what it is,
I did the thing, I think I've already shared, where, like, I was on the interstate, and I passed, and, like,
same.
My gut reaction was...
Was to look.
No, this was not an accident. This was just, there was, from far away, it looked like there was just garbage on the road. This is before anyone knew there was someone there. Ooh. I was driving, and my gut reaction, like, because I always, like, look just to check to make sure I don't hit anything, was like, oh my gosh, it's a dead body. And I was like, then I got rational. When you have a minute, you're like, no way. Like, no, someone would say something. The next day on the news, they were like, found a hit and run victim on the interstate. And I was like, where did they find it on the interstate? And it was where I had driven by the day before. I was like,
that's crazy.
So I know, I managed, like, to not thinking. Yeah. Like, I just, that's what I go to. My roommate and I were talking about it. Like, I would die in a horror movie because I just rationalize to the least scary, most realistic thing that it could be.
Well, that's what happened to Mom when she was bike riding. She rode past it, and this guy was dead in a ditch. He was wrapped in a blanket or a towel or something, and she was riding her bike, and she's like, that's not what I saw. Mm-hmm. That's not what I saw. She's like, but it could have been. I have to turn around, and I have to go back. And sure enough, when she went back, they called the crime lab out. The CSI came. She talked, made statements, whatever. And she didn't go bike riding for a long time after that.
I don't blame her.
But year before last, I was going to school one morning, And apparently this guy had a heart attack behind the wheel of his truck.
Oh,
It was like a dump truck or
no.
something.
Yeah.
The truck like coasted off to the side. He managed to stumble out of his truck and he died, collapsed over the guardrail.
Oh.
And they had thrown a tarp over him, but not before the police had gotten there to completely block traffic both ways, because it was a
yeah.
fatality between the, and I saw the body hanging over the guardrail, and I got to school, and that was back when I was working at that Catholic school,
mm-hmm.
and sister walked past me, and I literally just broke down
mm-hmm.
crying, and like she had to like shuffle me into the front office and send the assistant principal to go watch my kids for a little while I lost my mind.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God.
Yeah.
But,
it's
yeah.
scary. Whew. Well, there you go. A little, couple tips for you. So to recap, watch out for the candy. Watch out for the apples. If your gut's telling you it's a dead body, that's probably what it is. Happy Halloween, everyone.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Feels like the end of an era. But I'm kind of excited to get back to our
yes.
usual programming.
Because also I can stop feeling guilty about you doing all
you
the homework because I'm a last-minute person.
I like doing it.
But that. I think we did a good job of, like, splitting up the work. You do this
Absolutely.
One, you do this one, that kind of thing. So we weren't completely bombarded with
right.
stuff. But I like to wait to the last minute to do my things.
Yeah, I like to do it over time. And I didn't take notes the way I usually like to. So, if you don't like the tag team episodes, you're in luck. They're going to be
done
for
a
while.
While.
Yeah, we're done for a
Next
while.
Next one will be Thanksgiving week. Or the week, it'll come out the week after Thanksgiving, because we're going to record Thanksgiving week. Because, of course, I'm going to be home for Thanksgiving, so we're going to do something.
It's going to be exciting! We're so happy.
Thanksgiving week.
It's going to be really exciting. I'm going to teach Haley how to edit. So that'll
yeah,
be
Yeah, so
really
she doesn't
exciting.
Have to do that all by herself, too.
Which I don't mind. I really like
editing. I just show up. I'm just here.
I love editing, actually. That's my favorite part. Because I like, I feel like I have the most control over you whenever I edit. Because I can just
I'm just
going to
cut out Haley right now.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah,
I
don't
like
that.
It a lot. It's fun to figure out how to tell the story. But yes, so we'll be done with those for a while. If you did like the tag teams, we're sorry. We definitely won't be doing another. Well, put a pin in that. We have a couple written down, but I think we're going to end up pushing them back to the new year because we're sick of each other.
Yeah,
so.
Kind of. Though I got to say, after the first time we did the tag team where I thought I was going to kill you and we were never going to do a tag team episode again because Caroline got so mad at me for touching her stuff.
That's my margins.
It was just the margins. I was putting in information. She's like, where did this even come from? It was a whole thing.
Oh, yeah. I did.
And
I
swore to myself and to my mother, because she's my sounding board, I'm like, I will never do this with Caroline again.
You touched
and
my
And here we are, 5 weeks of it.
But we have figured out now. Like, we have figured out each other. I figured out you. I'm not so crazy about my notes. I don't take notes like I used to. But I had all
yeah,
my notes.
Yeah, but we're
going
to get back to that.
Like, where did those notes come from? But it's fine.
We're good.
We're good.
It's fine.
We're fine. We're going to have the podcast. We're not breaking up.
The band is staying together.
We're stuck with each other, whether y'all like it or not, or whether Haley likes it.
Whether we like it or not, we're family.
Yeah. Yeah. So, if you guys have Halloween stories, seriously, we'd really love to hear them. So email us at itshereditarypod@gmail.com and follow us on all the nonsense at It's Hereditary on Facebook and Instagram, at HereditaryPod on Twitter. Twitter's a little quiet, but we have fun there. Rate, review, subscribe. It helps us out a lot. More than you know. Yeah, you know, 5 stars. 5 stars. And we'll just come after you on Halloween if you give us 1 star. So that's
Michael
that.
Myers style with the mask.
Yes.
You would never know.
You'd never know it was us. I guess that'd be like Scream style. We could do that where it's like 2 of us and then 1 of us could be in the room. And then the other one could be sneaking up.
Can we make phone calls and ask people what their favorite scary movies are since they haven't been telling us?
Yes, I think we have to.
Be like, we'll find this out, but then we're going to kill you afterwards. But then we're going to post it on the podcast and you'll be famous forever anyway.
We should do a special where we just have recordings of people on the phone being like, hey, what's your favorite scary movie? And see what happens.
Like, are we calling people we know or perfect strangers?
No,
like,
no. People
random.
We know. People we know. Because then we can put them online without them getting mad at us. So everyone, if you get an unknown number from someone, it's probably us.
going to start Star 69, Star 67, whatever the heck it was.
I think it's Star 67.
Yeah. I think it's 67 to call and 69 to, like, try and call back a number.
Oh, okay.
It was both. I thought. Maybe Star not. 67. I don't know.
It's been a minute. I know. Since I've been that analog. But.
I did it last year, though.
I know you did.
Because I had to make a phone call to a parent.
That's so funny. Do you know what we're doing next week? Do you want to announce it?
Yes. Okay. We are jumping back to folklore. And again, we're going back to our roots a little bit there. We are doing Native American legends.
I'm really excited. I started just kind of looking today, perusing to see what I could find. And there is a lot.
One of my favorite legends is a Native American legend. And yeah. It's terrifying.
I think I know which one you're going to do. Are you going to do that one?
No, probably. I mean, I've touched on it a couple times, but you gotta really go for it. That episode of Supernatural was the scariest one.
That one was, I think. I think the Bloody Mary one was the scariest, but I mean, shout out episode one.
We know.
But that one was really scary. I love the, because I think you're going to go with that one, and I'm going to go with one. We're going back to how we usually do, where you go big hitter, and I go something no one's ever heard of and you can't find any information on it, but it'll be exciting. So we hope you all have a really happy Halloween. Seriously, guys, stay safe. We need every ear we can get. So stick around and sweet dreams.
Good night.